Hey Ryan, what's up? How you doing?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Doing good. Good to catch up.
Yeah, I
Good to pod
know.
again.
I know. We're getting consistent with the one-on-one podcast now, which is good. I feel like we always have something to talk about.
Yeah, I like this format. We're figuring out the format as we go, but I think me and Ryan discussing topics, news, that type of stuff is going to be just as fun as interviews. We'll still do those, but I really want to bring on people to talk to that we know really well, and we can give the best interview conversation with that's out there, the definitive one, not just have just anybody on. Well, we haven't really, that's all we've done so far. Everybody we brought on is someone we know pretty well. We're going to keep doing that. So you'll keep seeing those too. But to get into what we'll discuss today, to tease it a little bit, number one is we're doing a call with our listeners I'm going to talk about. Number two, me and Ryan are building a newsletter in public, which we're going to talk about. We're going to give you kind of a behind-the-scenes look into what we're doing, what our plans are. It's at the very early stages, so it's kind of all in theory now, but it might give you some insights on how to start your newsletter, what people like me and Ryan are thinking about when we're growing a newsletter. And then finally, we're going to talk about how to grow your agency with a newsletter, a topic that's really close to both of our hearts. We both have a little bit of experience with. So first of all, let's talk about the giveaway. So we're going to do a live hangout with our listeners. And to get access to that, you just need to do two things. Number one is leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or Spotify. And then number two is subscribe to our YouTube channel. The podcast is also on YouTube. If you search Matt McGeer, you're a newsletter operator, you'll find that. Subscribe to the channel. Send me a screenshot of both of those things via email. My email is matt@newsletteroperator.com. And then you'll get invited. And the plan is to do not just one of these calls, but hopefully multiple calls overall. And we might actually add more prizes and rewards too. But the trick is we're only going to do this call after we reach 100 5-star reviews on Apple, on Spotify, and we reach 1,000 YouTube subscribers. And we'll be there very soon, but we just don't want to do it until we actually get there. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, you'll be invited to that. And shoot us an email if you want to get access.
Yeah, exciting. I feel like whenever we've had calls like that, they've always been really productive. So, looking forward to seeing everybody on that call.
Yeah, I'd love to do one, every month bi-monthly. It'll be fun. Cool. So the first topic is our newsletter. We're not sharing the name of it yet because honestly, I just want to polish it up a little bit first. Like we're very in the like MVP stages, just getting things out there, trying to get traction as fast as possible. And after we hit a couple thousand subscribers, we'll share it publicly and promote it. And we also kind of want to try and grow this without using our audiences. Me and Ryan don't have large audiences, but we want to do it really from scratch. This can be a great case study, an example for other people to learn from.
Yeah. And I feel like we've been, it's become, I mean, obviously we're both busy with agency stuff and other businesses and projects, but I feel like maybe the last few weeks it's become much more of a front and center priority for us to really get it in a good spot and build it out and grow it. So yeah, excited to talk through everything we've been working on.
Yeah, let's get into that. That's honestly been the biggest roadblock so far, is we're just doing other things. And that's set us back a little bit. And we've gone for a couple months where we just didn't work on it at all. We changed the topic, we changed the name. But now we got the topic, we got the name, and we're growing. We're at about 522 subscribers now. We really started growing it, or promoting it, I should say, on somewhere between March 1st and March 14th. And we started to turn on growth and grow a little bit faster now. What would be good to discuss? I want to discuss, like, honestly, some action items about things that we need to do. We can give a recap of what we've done so far. Maybe we'll do the recap first and then do action items and our strategy after that.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, maybe we can even talk about the approach that through actually delivering the newsletter and how that's set up. I mean, we're using Beehive for everything outside of the sales landing page for the premium subscription. I think, it's Beehive, I'm sure we'll have improvements soon, but right now it's a little limiting in just design for like an upsell page. And I think that's something like that is super important. So we built that out in Card, but everything else is on Beehive. And yeah, we've built some upsell automations that free subscribers will get to upsell them to the premium kind of membership or offering. We've written out weeks and weeks of the actual newsletter itself. And I don't know, Matt, if you want to talk about how we're setting that up from a delivery standpoint, or if we're saving
Yeah.
that for something else, but.
So right now, to save time, it's automated. So I think right now we have 2 or 3 weeks of the newsletter. We're adding a couple more weeks soon. It's a once a week newsletter, and it's sent through an email automation every week at the same day and time, rather than us doing it manually every week. So we kind of batch the writing, put it in there. I don't think we'll do that forever, but that's how we wanted to start. And I think after we have like 4 to 6 weeks under our belt, we can kind of put that aside and just focus on growth and selling the product, which is something that's really important. It's hard to do all these things at the same time. Another thing we're doing differently is we have a premium subscription from day one, rather than launching that later or trying to start with ads, which you can't really start with ads if you don't have an audience. And that's one of the challenges with media or newsletters in general is you don't have an audience size of at least 10,000, sometimes 20,000 or more people. You can't make any money if you're focused on sponsorships and ads outside of kind of like programmatic stuff, which isn't really meaningful anyways. We don't want to do, you know, small promotions for $50, $100, although a lot of people should be doing that. And we might test some of that too. We want to drive real revenue so we can reinvest that into the business. So we have a premium subscription. That isn't, the product for that actually isn't live either. We're pre-selling the subscription. And the plan is when the product goes live, we're going to sell it for about $1,000 a year, $995, $997. And right now it's discounted heavily because of the pre-order. So we're selling it for around 80% off, which I think is a very good deal when you're pre-ordering something. A lot of times it's 50%. We went on the heavier end of the discount just to get revenue and traction as soon as possible for that.
Yeah. And we've identified partners that we're going to be working with to develop the premium content. It's going to be really, really in-depth. And I think we're both really excited about that side of it. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I know Jens Lennartsen, who a lot of folks that subscribe to the podcast and subscribe to Matt and I on social, you might see him on Twitter as well. But he was recently talking, and actually we're going to have him on the podcast in a little bit, in a couple of weeks here. But he was talking about the idea of an evergreen newsletter. And that's, we're doing kind of a hybrid approach to that, at least to start, where I think Jens' idea of an evergreen newsletter is basically an email sequence that's sent out on a weekly basis, but it's in like the format of a newsletter. So it's something that you've created beforehand, but it's delivered like a newsletter and marketed like a newsletter. We're doing something like that to start, in that we're batching all of the writing and having it delivered in a sequence like that. But then we're also going to be delivering on a weekly basis once folks get through that automation. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. And I think it's a somewhat unique approach, and we're going to test it and see how it works. And then, yeah, I think the other, to your point, Matt, like monetizing on day one, it's a question that I think a lot of newsletter operators have, is whether or not they should start monetizing on day one, or whether or not they should have a premium product or something like that on day one. I would say, why not? You know, it's like, why not monetize on day one if you can? It does require you to have a product or an idea for a product that you're going to deliver on. But at the same time, it allows you to start investing in the growth flywheel a lot sooner, and actually gives you a reason to do that because there's a revenue outcome there.
Yeah, I think it's a must, and it's not for everybody, because if you're just starting, you don't really have that product, but I would try and develop it quickly. I think we went into this knowing we want to develop them at the same time. We don't want to figure out how to monetize later, because we're not trying to grow an audience here. We're trying to generate revenue. And so we went into it with that plan. But again, it's all like, right now we've sold one pre-order, one subscription so far. And so we have like, it's around $300 in revenue. So we're not profitable by any means. We haven't spent a ton either. But hopefully that's going to change soon, right? So why don't we talk about how we're getting subscribers and break that down, and how we plan to improve that. The challenging thing is we haven't had a lot of time. Really, the way you grow a newsletter is you create free content on social media or other platforms like YouTube, for example, and you drive them to your newsletter. We really haven't had time to do that. So right now we focused on paid growth. So the paid growth channels we're using, we started with Facebook ads. Meta ads, Facebook ads is really buggy right now. And we had to pause that until I've had time to really figure that out and then make new creative for this. Have you heard about this bug, Ryan? It's like, it's affecting most advertisers right now.
Yeah, it's a pain. And yeah, there was like all sorts of stuff that was happening with our like campaigns that partners are running, or campaigns that we have access to on Meta, all sorts of just crazy like problems with tracking, problems with attribution, just overspending. I'm sure are you managing as many ad accounts as you are? I'm sure that you're experiencing.
Yeah, and it's hit or miss, but we've had some clients where this happened around like March 12th to 14th, around there, maybe before, but it's something just absolutely crushed performance for, and some it hasn't affected at all. And like a lot of them we fixed now. We might need to use a new ad account for this newsletter, because we're just spending and we're getting signups, but no attribution, even though we're using the same tracking as we did before the bug. So we're going to come back to Pittsburgh ads. I'm kind of playing like the wait and see game because we're bootstrapping this. I don't want to spend a ton of money on ads until we actually know that's working well. And we want a really good CPA. Before this happened, we were getting subscribers from Meta for about $2. And we want to get back to that when we launch them. So I'm going to approach that probably next month. We're going to use Twitter ads too. We've run into some roadblocks there. It's funny. When you start from scratch, you run into a lot of road bumps and roadblocks. This is like, I haven't really started anything from scratch in like 2 or 3 years. So it's a challenging experience. With Twitter, we haven't been able to add a payment method. I added like 3 or 5 credit cards. Nothing works. Twitter support is useless. So we're going to test that as well. But the stuff that we are using right now, we're using Spark Loop's partner program. We're live there, but only for a couple of days. So we're kind of waiting to see how the results turn out. And we're using Beehive's Boost to pay for subscribers. And I wish I could speak to more of those on how they're working for us on this newsletter. But Spark Loop, it gets you a lot of volume very quickly, but we only started like 4 days ago, and so we don't have the results yet. Beehive, even if you set a budget in a high CPA, it's hard to get people to boost your newsletter. Like, we've put like $1K in our Beehive wallet, and we spend like $8 so far. And our CPA is very competitive. It's not like we're paying $1 per subscriber. We're paying over $2 per subscriber. You know, I started to reach out to people today using Beehive's new outreach feature in the Boost marketplace. So hopefully that will get us more Boost. But right now we have like 4 or 5 Boosts live, and we need to get more so we actually have some volume coming. I think we have 1, 2, 3. We have over 6 Boosts live, but not all of them are driving volume. Most of the subscribers are coming from just one other publication, and we really need, you know, 4 or 5 other publications giving us subscribers, and that's not what we have yet.
On the ad side, it's just so crazy how, and this won't be new to anybody who is operating paid marketing, but just so crazy how hard it is to get support for it, when you're spending a lot of money even from like Twitter ads or from Meta ads. Yeah, it can be pretty frustrating. That being said, we have grown quite a bit. Yeah, we're operating a lot of channels at the same time and testing a lot at the same time, which I think is super helpful. And yeah, what is funny, one thing that we did for partners when we were managing Boosts for them is I don't know if it's like a new outreach thing, but when you could apply to Boost for other people, we used to just create like a ChatGPT prompt that would basically create like a personalized message for them and saying like, hey, our audience is related to your audience for this reason. And like, so could be useful to build something like that, but.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's good for monetizing too. We're using Spark Loop Upscribe to monetize on the sign up, not Boost for that. And they kind of automatically will kind of apply for you. So you don't have to do that. But with Boost, if people kind of don't pick your publication, it's hard. Until like literally today, BI released this feature where you can message people. So I got to make some better tailored messages to send to people. So I'll try that out.
Should we talk about our sales landing page and how it's like basically just the format of it at a high level?
Yeah, let's talk about that briefly. I want to talk about organic growth because I think we need to figure that out soon, because I don't think it's a good idea to grow a newsletter just with paid ads. No. Now, we're going to be using at least 4 different paid ad sources, but that's not going to be our only acquisition play. But let's talk about the sales page and conversion first, because if you can't convert people to customers, it doesn't really matter how big your audience is, you know?
Yeah, let me open it up and I'll see if I can basically walk through at least at a high level our format for it. So nothing, I mean, above the fold, it's just headline, subheadline, and like a value statement. And then the next piece of the landing page, which I think is really important and something that I know we tested a lot at The Hustle, and I've tested a lot since with other publications that we've worked with, is like a letter format. So like a long form, like sales letter from Matt and I. I mean, it doesn't say Matt and I on there yet, but it's from the team at the newsletter, basically outlining, it's just like a long form direct response sales letter. And then it goes into a breakdown of what's included in the membership, like a number breakdown, and then a sneak peek of all of our curriculum.
Yeah. It's probably not the most exciting thing to explain all this.
Yeah, I was going
to say. Well, you'll get to see it later. Yeah. But I think the important thing is like it's long. It's over 2,500 words. It has FAQs. It covers objections. It's missing some key things, which we should talk about. But I think that's just a mistake a lot of people make, because they don't have a 3-section website to sell a expensive membership. Even if it's $50, $100, like it's not enough information to sell me on buying information from you. So we always talk about that. Like, information sells information. You need a story. You need to make people feel something.
Yeah, I could go on for 15 more minutes and just explain the intricacies of the landing page without reading anything, but I think we'll probably pass on that.
Yeah, no, maybe.
Yeah, long form direct response. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I think, well, let's talk about what's missing from this. Because we haven't attached our names and faces to this yet, it's missing that. And it's really hard to sell courses, subscription memberships, any type of community or education product without like knowing who the people behind it are, the teachers are, the instructors are. So that's one thing we're missing. And I think we're going to go ahead, even though we're not announcing yet, I think we're going to go ahead and add that. And let me know if you disagree. Is it going to help with conversion a ton? Seems really simple, but like a lot of people miss this. You can't really, there's like all these like anonymous gurus on Twitter and across the internet. It's like, they would be much more successful selling stuff if they had their faces on, I believe, and if their real identities actually had some credibility behind them.
Yeah, I've been on like sales calls with anonymous Twitter, like money Twitter people, like selling courses and stuff like that, and like no videos off. Like, it just feels like a very shady transaction. But
yeah, I don't get why people continue to do that. For a lot, there's a couple of people who are kind of like a journalist angle. Like, I talked to this guy called like the Culture Critic. He has a large Twitter account, but he's not selling these types of products. He's not selling services and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. You don't have to really exchange a lot of money with him, so it makes sense for him to be anonymous. Another thing we're missing is just testimonials and social proof, because it's a new product. We don't have that yet, and that is probably like 50%, at least 30% of selling these types of products is testimonials and social proof, and we have zero. So we're missing a third of our persuasion power, which really sucks.
Yeah, I mean there's really no fixing that at this stage, unfortunately. I don't know how we haven't had folks go through the program yet, so it's not a problem that we can solve immediately, at least, but just means we have to do more of our selling with what's in the curriculum and the program.
Yeah, and we got to speak to our authority more and our experience more, and like why we can help them. I think that will fix it. So we don't have social proof, but we can have some authority. Another thing we're using a lot of urgency, because we're pre-selling this. The discount's only going to be available when we're pre-selling it. So that's another kind of persuasion, psychological factor that's working in our advantage when some may be working against us. So I think if we're able to get social proof, authority, and urgency in play here, and the offer is actually relevant to people, people will buy it. But we don't have all those things yet. So I think on where we can fix this, we got to add our stuff. And once we start creating the content, we got to get some beta users, even if we're giving them access for free, get some beta users that are our friends to test it. If they like it, give us a testimonial so we can add that to the sales page.
Yeah. I mean, so this sales page at a high level, what's needed, where it's at currently. Yeah. I think what's been done so far, again, just to cover, it's like we've got the newsletter written, or at least like first few editions written and put in an automation. We've got a couple paid growth channels that we're running. We're testing recommendation platforms and driving subscribers. We have an email sequence built out, and like an upsell sequence for that membership, and that drives that sales page that we were just talking about. And yeah, I think to your point, Matt, one thing that we're missing right now, at least kind of at scale, is organic growth. And so, yeah, I think talking through that could be helpful, and maybe in thinking through our approach to that, folks who are listening might learn something from what we've seen work well.
Yeah, we have kind of constrained there, because I think the way we're going to get organic growth is when we show this publicly, I'm going to tweet about it, I'm going to post about it on LinkedIn, you're going to do the same thing, and we're going to have call to actions for the newsletter. So it's just that simple strategy that so many people have used well. So that's going to be our biggest organic growth driver in the future, and that's something everybody should be doing if they run a media company, but we don't have that yet. I mean, it's really hard to grow a company account or an anonymous account, which is basically what this is, from scratch. Like, we have a Twitter account for the company, like LinkedIn, all that stuff. Yeah, I don't even know if it even makes sense to even attempt that right now. I think we want to continue to promote the company Twitter account, so we're building up some followers there. But I don't think it's going to be a growth driver. I don't think you can grow on Twitter from scratch anymore. I think you could do it on LinkedIn, but the type of content we're creating isn't, I don't know if it would work as well on LinkedIn.
I think a potential approach could be like faceless YouTube Shorts or faceless TikTok. And then eventually, I mean, honestly, at the point we're at right now, it's like it's fine to use our like faces and stuff. And I don't think we're that serious about keeping anything anonymous. It's just like we're just waiting for the announcement. So it's like, but yeah, I think there's a higher or a better chance of discovery on those platforms, I would think.
Yeah.
And I have less experience, but everything that I've heard is that it's a lot easier to have people discover your content on those versus something like Twitter starting from zero or LinkedIn starting from zero.
Yeah, I don't have experience either. So I'm kind of an armchair content creator here, but I think that makes sense. And like, again, like we don't care if our face is on it. Like the reason we're not sharing that yet is if people buy it, we want to make sure like it's ready and everything is polished before we share it to our personal accounts. Because when we do, people are going to buy stuff and want to make sure they have a great experience with the content, the product, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's the main reason right now. But yeah, like, what do you think about that organic growth strategy? Just like, it's tough because I think you filmed some videos. I haven't done as much. It's just a whole nother thing, a whole nother channel, a whole nother type of content you have to figure out.
It is. And it's very uncomfortable, especially filming yourself and like bringing the kind, I mean, probably more natural for some people than others, but like bringing like the energy that you need to make a video engaging. It's not natural for myself, at least, like without, you know, filming a selfie and being like, hey, have you heard of this new newsletter? Like it's really tough. you feel so cringy doing it. But I mean, that's part of it. That's just like part of it. And it's not cringy when it's working and you're selling something successfully, efficiently, or getting people to subscribe to something. If it's working, it's not cringy. But yeah.
Yeah. We don't have to do it in the traditional like selfie style video way. Like we could do podcast videos. Like we could just, we film stuff together going over a topic that's like semi-scripted. And then we cut that into, you know, multiple 10, 30 second videos, have my editor edit it, and then post those to the short form channels, probably from the brand account at first, and then later on from our accounts. And so we could just do like podcast videos. So it's like, imagine a vertical video, like your head's on top, my head's on the bottom, and like there's maybe in the middle, there's subtitles, and we pull in B-roll footage and stuff when it's relevant. And so it's like a podcast. We have a podcast set up, and I'll get some red curtains or something. No, just kidding. But it could be that. It doesn't have to be us filming like scripted. UGC, although that can work too. But I feel like we could knock out, like we can get together for an hour and we can knock out like six videos in 1 hour versus like if I'm doing a scripted video, I'm going to be doing like 12 takes and I might have one video come out of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm in this like program right now, like a coaching program or kind of like a course for whatever you want to call it. But one of the deliverables for every day is like filming a bunch of short form video. And so I will definitely be getting the reps in, but it's interesting. I mean, just talking about this, like for folks that are listening, like I think one of the most useful frameworks that you can lean into, especially for building organic content and also ads, like paid ad content as well, is, I mean, you're writing this newsletter every week, right? So like, why don't you just lean into having the newsletter as the top of kind of this content flywheel. So take the newsletter, cut it up into like tweet-sized bits that you can tweet out and put on LinkedIn. Take the most interesting stuff and turn that into scripts for short form. You could build prompts like GPT prompts or make automations to do all of this for you too. So you build a system once, you plug in your newsletter content and it creates like this distribution like flywheel for you. That's something that I built for my agency and for partners that we're working with. And it's also, it's just, you build it once, you have a system, and it makes the entire organic content distribution system a lot easier.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do for this. So it's basically every newsletter has three topics, and each of those topics could be one video for us. And I'm not afraid, and I don't think people should be either, I'm not afraid to talk about the thing that's going to be in my newsletter later. If you have already seen the video, which odds are you haven't, it's okay if it's one of the topics in the newsletter. It's okay if there's a little bit of repetition.
Yeah.
I've done this a ton with myself. Like that's the system I have for my content. I've grown a small but engaged and highly monetized audience on Twitter and LinkedIn. And it's just like, I read a newsletter every week and then that becomes content that I repurpose later on. And my team helps with that too. So it's not really all my time now. Yeah, I asked this question on Twitter recently, like, you know, where are the audience growth opportunities right now? Because they're different than they were a year or two ago. Like from 2020 to 2023, or early 2023, Twitter was a great audience growth opportunity. Like you could post decent quality threads and reach people. What's getting good reach on Twitter now is videos, is short form videos, which kind of sucks. It's like, we already have so many freaking short form video platforms. Do we need another one? Now LinkedIn's apparently doing short form video too. It just makes me want to puke. But that is the way, I guess. So we're going to have to figure it out or be left behind. I don't know.
Yeah. I think video is where everything's headed. LinkedIn video platform. LinkedIn, it's like LinkedIn TikTok, isn't it? It's kind of just like a discovery platform now, like built into LinkedIn, where you can just like scroll through like the equivalent of like Reels or like TikToks.
I haven't seen it yet, but apparently it's new. I saw an article about it.
Yeah.
You know, apparently there's a good amount of reach with LinkedIn carousels. You've probably seen a ton of these. I'm doing some too. And that could be a good strategy for this. Although I don't know if our audience is super on LinkedIn. But maybe.
What is your workflow? What is your workflow for those? Because those look really good. It looks like you're just screenshotting tweets, or are those like built in Canva?
It's Canva. Yeah. So like, and then we'll do the thread on Twitter, which is the same content. So it's like write a newsletter. My guy turns it into a Twitter thread in a Canva carousel, and then those are posted to LinkedIn, Twitter. You know, Twitter, I've gotten great results. LinkedIn is hard because like the content I do is super niche. It's all about newsletters, right? And what I've found and what I've heard from other LinkedIn experts is you have to have like what they call top of funnel content on LinkedIn, really broad content. If you're just talking about how to monetize a newsletter, like how to do SaaS sales and pricing, like you're not going to get very good reach. But if you talk about, you know, boring shit, like 5 books every entrepreneur should read, and you have a good hook for that, it will get really good reach. And so if you look at the people who've done well on LinkedIn, that's the type of content they're posting. How to find a job, you know, interview questions you should ask, like things that apply to millions of people, but content I really don't give a fuck about.
It's like the meme, like where it's like, yeah, I was really like nice to this guy on the way to the grocery market, and then like I showed up to the interview and it was him, and it's just like those kind of like anecdotal stories where it's like they're obviously just unfortunately that is how it works. That's how it used to work on Twitter too, is you could just have these threads that were like basically just like Wikipedia articles, like summarized. It's like, have you ever heard of Michael Jackson? It's like, the king of pop, like, released these 5 songs. And then there's like a little thread boy, like, pointing down with the threads.
Yeah. And there are a lot of bad ones on Twitter, although I think there were a lot of good threads too on Twitter, which I still revisit. But so a LinkedIn kind of growth guy I know named Andy Mewborn, he's the co-founder of Taplio, the LinkedIn scheduling tool, which is very successful. That was exactly what I said to him. He's like, the things that work well on LinkedIn are things that worked well on Twitter 2 years ago. Exactly what you just talked about. Yeah. So, I mean, the good thing is like this newsletter topic is pretty broad. It's for entrepreneurs and business owners. So there is more top of funnel stuff we can talk about. I don't think we're going to do book recommendations and shit like that, but LinkedIn carousels could be a good one. And you could do this from a company account too, not just a personal account. Although when we do announce it, we'll definitely be doing posts about this from our personal accounts.
Mm-hmm.
But I think like we got to figure out like what we're going to actually do though, because we talked about a bunch of stuff just now, but you can't do a dozen different social platform or organic growth events. They take so much time.
Yeah, especially to do them well, because doing them well requires consistency. Like, it's not even necessarily about like nailing. I mean, having great quality content is important, but also in order to like build a platform, build an audience on those platforms. On any platform, it's almost always just consistency. It's just doing it every day.
So what do you think? I mean, I want to pick like low-hanging fruit too. And I think the problem is it's going to change. Like I think threads for my account, like LinkedIn carousels for my account will work. I don't even know if I want to bother building a company, a Twitter or LinkedIn account outside of just having it. Or maybe we just wait on organic growth until we announce it publicly. That might be just a couple weeks.
Yeah. I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. We're starting to get everything in a really good spot. I feel good about the branding. I feel good about the initial content that we put together, and we have systems to build that, to put that content out on a regular basis now. So yeah, I think organic could be a move when we have our faces more publicly attached to it. And yeah, I think Twitter, I mean, just Twitter is so good for newsletters because it's just the kind of one-to-one on the format almost. I mean, obviously like newsletters are longer form, but like it's just a text, you know, text-based platform. So folks on there, and also just the audience that's on there, I feel is more attuned to and open to reading newsletters. And I don't know if that's been your experience or...
Yeah, totally. I have a really good conversion rate. Like I have 15,000 Twitter followers and I've gotten like over 10,000 subscribers from Twitter. Which is really, really good. LinkedIn has not been a good conversion rate for me. I'm only like 5,000 followers on LinkedIn. I don't know. I'm curious if other people have seen the same with those platforms. Shoot me an email or something. Okay, I guess that's the plan. Like, let's just focus on paid growth until we announce it, and then we'll figure out organic growth when we announce it. And we'll start with Twitter. And then I would like to do more YouTube. I'll save this for another conversation, but like I'm thinking about spending more time and resources making YouTube videos, like long form YouTube videos, instead of posting on Twitter and LinkedIn every day. I see a lot of alpha there, a lot of long term value that can be built up. And it doesn't seem like rocket science. I mean, it's not easy, but
we should do like a, not like a mastermind, but like a, just a Slack channel with like folks that are getting started on YouTube, because I'm doing the same. And it's like, I feel like we could all kind of learn together. If any other folks are interested in that, hit us up on Twitter.
Yeah, I didn't know you're doing that. Let me know what you're doing later. And there's some people we could have on the podcast to talk about that too. There's awesome. Actually a lot of good people we could talk with. I want to wrap up this topic in a second. So I think just to put a pin on that, we're going to focus on paid growth for now and just focus on getting our conversion rate right. The paid panel channels we're going to use are Meta Ads, Twitter Ads, Beehive Boost, Spark Loop, and then we're going to do newsletter ads too, which I don't think we have time to get into that strategy now, but that could be a good one. But I haven't tested that one as much. So we'll just do 5 paid growth channels, which is more than enough to test.
Yeah. And we can talk more about the newsletter strategy in a future episode, because I think the way that we're approaching that is super interesting as well.
Okay. Anything else we should share on the newsletter or go on to the next thing?
No, I think we'll have more to share very soon. So,
yeah, I think next time would be more entertaining for people to see what the metrics are. So right now I just said the subscriber number, the revenue, but we'll have more cool stuff to share soon. And you'll be able to see everything, you know, the sales page, the emails, all that good stuff.
Awesome.
Okay. So, next topic, a friend of ours, Brad Wolverton, former colleague of ours at The Hustle and HubSpot, started the newsletter, and I think he's doing some really cool things. So I wanted to discuss that, and if you want to subscribe to it, it's newsletterexamples.co is where you can find that.
Yeah, I think like Brad is probably one of the most experienced newsletter operators out there, just in terms of, you know, I mean, he was the editor-in-chief of The Hustle all the way through the HubSpot acquisition, is still at HubSpot helping develop The Hustle and Trends. So really cool opportunity to kind of get his takes with a free newsletter there. So highly recommend folks check it out.
Yeah, what Brad is doing is something I haven't seen before. So it's called Newsletter Examples, and he's breaking down newsletter content that he loves and sharing why it works. So, I mean, there's not really much like this. Have you seen marketing examples? I think Brad was a little bit inspired by how like Harry Dry would break down a marketing campaign or some copywriting and share some cool tidbits on it. And outside of that, I haven't really seen anything like this. It's really hard to do, and you have to really know your shit to like break down, this is like why this newsletter and intro section is cool. Like, this is why this template works. But it just shows you the intricacies and nuances of great newsletter content. And I haven't seen content out there about this. Brad wrote a couple of threads on Twitter years ago that I still revisited about how to write good subject lines, how to create a newsletter tone of voice that's interesting and unique. But I mean, let me know what you've seen, but what else has been helpful to you when you write newsletters? Because you do this as part of your service.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there was a presentation that Brad gave at The Hustle when I was there. And it was a while back, but it was basically like best practices for the daily, and it was like so in depth in how it described how to write briefs, how to structure a newsletter, like even down to like word count for specific sections. I mean, he just had the entire formatting for the daily systemized on a level that, I mean, is you don't really see too often in newsletters or media. But he was so I think what would be helpful maybe in a future episode is we could have him on and just have him talk through that. That would be really cool. Yeah, I know he would have.
Yeah, we'll do that. And I think, yeah, it's hard to pull like exact examples out of this, but I think one thing that I take away that I've had is like there's a system and there's SOPs in place for writing the newsletter. And companies like The Hustle and Morning Brew have these nailed down. Every writer goes through this training and understands it. Of course, they have the ability to innovate and share unique content within that format, within those constraints, but there are constraints, and that gives readers a consistent reading experience, and it helps develop a habit in their life. And that's what Brad has done a really good job of, and that's what the newsletter breaks down. The ones that he's broken down so far are, you know, number one was The Hustle. He talked about the voice stuff, and I won't get into that. You can go read it. He brought up Kendall Baker's newsletter, which has changed hands a couple times. It's now under Yahoo Sports AM. Have you read this newsletter from Kendall, or do you know Kendall?
Well, I read the I read Brad's write up on it, so I know of it through that. But yeah,
it's really good. If you want to see examples of just newsletter writing in templates and formats that have done well, I like Yahoo Sports AM, and also Kendall. I believe his newsletter was acquired by Axios, and he wrote the Axios Sports newsletter for a long time and before he moved to Yahoo very recently. And obviously, Axios is another great example of really great writing and templates. They have this whole smart brevity format and like thing that they've coined. Have you read Axios, Ryan? Like, they have the bullet points. Let me know and describe it, because it's a little bit tricky to explain this verbally, but let me know what you think.
Yeah. I mean, Axios, obviously, they sold for a ton of money. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but yeah, I think they did. They also just have so many newsletters too, right? Like if you go to their newsletters page, I'm not sure what it looks like now, but last time I looked at it, it was just like so many, like, I mean, you have like your basic like news and tech newsletters, but then like subcategorized to like really, really niche topics. Kind of like further niche down version of what Morning Brew has done. Where they have like Marketing Brew and so forth. So
yeah, they have local newsletters too. They have a lot of B2B stuff. Axios Media Trends is one that I read, and like it is one thing about that we should note is like every newsletter kind of follows a similar template, and it has the smart brevity style. Lots of bullet points. Another thing they do is every section, so like every story is numbered. So the first story is like 0 or 1, and then there's 2, 3, 4, and so it makes it easier to follow on mobile where you're at. What has helped me in writing newsletters is just, I don't know if I have like a format that I can explain, there or a formula that works for me, but basically I go subscribe to these with an email that I just have for newsletters, and I see what they're doing, and I kind of apply what they're doing to my stuff that I like, and I kind of leave the stuff that I don't like out. So the ones that I look at are, of course, the Awesome Morning Brew. I look at Yahoo Sports AM. I look at all the Axios newsletters. There's a new one called the Bay Area Times. Have you seen this newsletter, or have you read it?
I have. They do visuals really well.
They do visuals well, but they also have the bullet style writing. So it's very brief. It's almost like Axios had ADD or something. It's like, I think they very much emulated Axios' style, but they made it even shorter than Axios. Another one is Charter, which is a visual newsletter, but also has really good writing style. It also emulates Axios a lot. You can see patterns here. Like a lot of people emulate Morning Brew at Axios and The Hustle too. But those are like my top 4 or 5. Are there any others that come to mind for you that you look at as examples when you're writing or designing a newsletter?
Yeah, I've got to say like Alex Garcia at Marketing Examined, some of his more recent, I mean, they've been evolving. The newsletters have been evolving over time, obviously, but he put out like a few newsletters about like influencer partnerships, and just like the visual design of those were really well done. It's like super coherent and looks awesome. So shout out to Alex. But yeah, I think, you know, digestible, visual, and valuable is, I think, a good little like bite-sized framework to think about how to write a newsletter or an engaging newsletter. We've done a lot of testing, especially around like length of a newsletter, especially if you're driving to a call to action at the bottom. Like you just have to think through it intuitively, like how much is somebody going to read when they just open an email on a daily or weekly basis. And so just keeping it as actionable as possible, as valuable and compressed like value to text ratio as possible.
Is there a length of text or characters? Like a range?
It varies, but like, for like a main piece, we would try to keep it to like 300 words, which yeah. if you look at it in an email format, it can look really long. But like, yeah, like 300, 350 words for like the original piece. And then we'll have some like dynamic pieces too, where it's like maybe a more visual, like for example, like Milk Roads, like Fear and Greed Index, like something dynamic like that, that you can update every week. That's just a visual.
I like that. And yeah. I think the Hustle, like that's one of the things they've done with their stories. They call them briefs. It's always under 300 words. For this newsletter, I think we're trying to keep the entire thing under 1,000 words, the one that we're building together. And the main content's probably 800 words. And the main content consists of 3 different topics, which are less than 300 words each, probably. So I guess we're following that formula. I didn't even think about it that way.
Yeah.
The one other thing that I had was something that I just forgot, but it might come back to me in a second.
Yeah. I think like a really easy format, if you wanted to follow it, is quick intro, a dynamic graphic piece. Again, I'll use the example of Milk Road's Fear and Greed Index, just because I think that's really well executed. Bay Area Times does something similar too, just at the top. They have like, they always have like a chart or something. Your original piece, which like 300 words, and then either like a meme or like a curated link section. That's how I would think about it. But
I like that. Yeah. That was actually what I forgot, was just having that. So Bay Area Times, they basically have a table that shows you prices of different commodities and stocks like S&P 500, oil, a couple other ones. Morning Brew's done that same thing too. You gave the Milk Road example. That is just like, they do that so you build a habit of opening the newsletter. And this is something Brad talks about a lot, is newsletters are a habit product. You want to get someone to open every morning as part of their morning routine or as part of their weekly routine. And so when you have something like that that is updated dynamically every day or every week that changes and is important to keep track of and know, that can be a really powerful habit builder. I think the obvious ones are like market updates. The Fear and Greed Index is a lot more creative, and I think that's why it works really well and why it's a great example. Are there any other ones? Because I don't really know a lot outside of those two things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, ExecSum, I think, has like charts at the top of their newsletter as well.
Yeah,
a lot of financial
newsletters.
They just have
more in-depth market charts. Like, they just go into a little bit more detail than like not just the big like three movers like Morning Brew has.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, just something visual. I mean, it's newsletter obviously is a text-based medium, but I think, well, there are other folks who are doing it well. We've talked about examples of like a meme newsletter, like a meme-only newsletter, which I still think is a great idea. And if somebody executes that well, I think it'll be successful. And, you know, the Smart Nonsense folks have done something similar there as well. But I think just being creative with the way that you incorporate visuals in your newsletter is important, and it'll set you apart as well.
Yeah. And I think it's just visualizing simple things too. Another one that I've seen before is like, if you're covering a niche topic like media, for example, you might have a graphic that's updated every week or every day about the earning reports of those public media companies that you're talking about in the newsletter, or their stock price. I've seen that before. Another one that could work well is like if you're covering influencers or someone that has like a public subscriber account or follower account, like having a graph for that or having an update on that. Like if you're talking about Mr. Beast a lot in your creator economy newsletter, you can have a graph about like the top five YouTube channels and how many subscribers they have or how many views they're getting in the past 30 days. And, like, update that every week or every month, and people kind of keep track of that. Like, where's Mr. Beast at versus someone else? I don't even know what the second best YouTuber is these days. But there's all types of creative examples. You have to kind of get creative with it depending on your niche. But that's cool, man. I think this is a good place to wrap. While it's on my mind, another one I really like is the Published Press. And they very much emulate Morning Brew's style. In the hustle style, but they do it in a really creative way.
I'll throw one more example out there, just in terms of visuals, is Young Money by Jack Rains. I remember when I first saw that newsletter, I thought it was awesome. I mean, it still is awesome. It's gotten even better, but like, I mean, all of his visuals and graphics just look like it was him in like MS Paint or something, like just like stick figures and stuff, but like draws. It's kind of like it's supposed to be more simplistic than this, but like, wait, but why too?
Yeah, that's a good example. I was going to mention that one. And it's like, you know when it's a wait, but why piece when you see that, or you know when it's a Young Money piece when you see that little drawing that he did in Photoshop or MS Paint.
Yeah.
And so those probably don't take very long either, because they're purposely not well done. So I think that's a really cool touch people can add. Cool. All right. Awesome episode. I'll talk to you soon, man.
Sounds good.